I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Greetings, Grapple fans, and welcome to this, your latest installment of the Pro Wrestling Index right here on the Anfield Index podcast channel. I am Andy Wales, here as host for this evening, joined as ever by my audio tag team partner, Mo Chatra. And Mo, we've got a huge weekend of action to look back on, haven't we?
Oh, certainly. Very eventful, very memorable on the whole. Very good. So when it's very good, it always makes it that much better to look back and recap. So yeah, plenty that happened over what transpired to be 4 days of show. So
yeah, very exciting. That's it. 4 days, you know. The Barclays Arena sold out, sold to the rafters. You know, it was a great crowd at times. Obviously, a lot of fun for people there and about. All the other things that are going on, you know, is SummerSlam, the whole SummerSlam thing's become a big weekend, you know, similar along the lines to WrestleMania. Obviously, we've got the NXT takeover show that kicked things off. Just briefly before we kick into that, though, I mean, overall on SummerSlam, your thoughts, because it's had some mixed reviews, you know. And I've got to say, I think there was, you know, it was some bad, some good within it, but some of it was excellent. I've got to say, I quite enjoyed it, and I quite enjoyed the full weekend.
Yeah, so did I. I didn't get some of the criticism, to be honest. Yes, I mean, there were certainly subpar matches on the show, but it's a bit unrealistic to expect every match to be a great match, especially when there's 13 matches on the card, and they've got... certainly for the main show, 10 matches to get through in 4 hours, which sounds like a lot of time, but when you factor in your promo packages, interviews, entrances, etc., that doesn't leave huge amounts of time for every single match. Number of matches were about 10, 11, 12 minutes, so I didn't have a chance to go 15, 20 and build into amazing matches, but, No, I thought overall very pleasing, so I don't get the criticism.
Yeah, and in some cases the promo videos were actually longer than the matches.
Oh yeah, yeah, especially one match in particular, which we'll come on.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. SummerSlam, the entire package on the Sunday night. Yeah, you factor in the pre-show. There's 6 hours and. You know, how great NXT was and the excitement and the raucous of that crowd. You can't have that kind of energy for 6 hours, can you?
No, you can't. No, that's right. And that's what helped the takeover show to be, well, certainly to come across like the overall better show, I felt. A lot fewer matches, only 5. But the fact it was done and dusted in 2.5 hours was perfect for a crowd. Sitting, to watch wrestling live for more than 3 hours, it does start to get a bit too much. But to go 6 hours, that's really something. Well, I suppose you can almost say it's taking the piss. But that was well done to that crowd that they hung in there. And, you know, we're still reasonably lively even towards the end of it. So that was good. But certainly the NXT, timing-wise, was a lot better. And therefore, the crowd reactions were stronger overall.
Yeah, I mean, let's get into that takeover then. Because we spoke about it, you know, last week. We're previewing and we're looking at it and we're saying, on paper, you look at it, you can see that there's going to be good matches, but storyline-wise, it hasn't really sort of gripped you or excited you. But we still felt quite optimistic about it. We get to the event, and obviously, I think the crowd really does help to enhance matches. You know, a good match can feel like a great match with the right kind of crowd. And crowds at these NXT events usually are really good, strong, quite hardcore. And the crowd were great, and just, I think they delivered. What, you know, when we looked up beforehand, what we actually got, I feel that the takeover event really over delivered.
Yeah, I thought none of the matches were poor. We had two really, really good, bordering on excellent matches, and the remaining three matches were pretty good. Or very good in their own right. So, you know, when you've got a show full of good to great matches and nothing is poor, you can't really ask for a great deal more than that. So the pacing was really good. You know, everything was logical and well presented. Talents were over. The crowd was as amped up as you get. You know, the Brooklyn crowd does attract you know, the most hardcore of the fans amongst the WWE fan base, as you mentioned, and you know, they react to everything on these shows very strongly, and it's an annual tradition now. But yeah, the opener was great. I thought it would be actually a pretty good match, but it was even better than I expected. Gargano,
huge pop for him, wasn't it?
That's right. Yeah,
no, it was. Really, were into him.
That's it. And, you know, he had his working boots on, and so did Almas. Now, he's somebody who's not really lived up to his potential since coming into NXT, but he certainly made the effort in this contest and pulled off a surprise victory. And that was certainly a really good, really good match. But I thought the match of the night, though, was the bout between Asuka and Ember Moon for the NXT Women's Championship. And I think, as we predicted last week, Asuka retained. But it looked very, very close on a couple of occasions that she would drop that title. But fantastic near falls. Asuka, though, held her onto the belt. And
smart
one of the
booking.
Best. Yeah, it was, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it certainly.
So she's held on to it. But like you said there, you know, Ember Moon, you know, really took her close. And it's that kind of thing, isn't it? That teasing that audience. You're getting closer. We're getting closer. We're getting closer. Hang in there.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, on commentary, we were talking about the length of the title reign and the undefeated streak and things like that. And, you know, just in the way that they worked the match, the way they told the story in that match, increasing desperation as she tried so hard to win the title, it elevated Ember Moon. You know, go back to early this year, and she really didn't come across like much of a star, much of a talent, but she clearly showed she's got something. And, you know, if she challenges for that title again, perhaps at the NXT TakeOver prior to the Survivor Series, you know, that could be the thing that really puts her over the top in terms of the NXT Women's Division. So even though she lost, she still emerged a winner. And no, that's how it should be.
Yeah, and the tag titles changing hands. I mean, in that we've seen just how the how much the Authors of Pain have moved on and progressed. A good contest, this good match. Not just for what happened, but what happened afterwards. Again, and it will come to this, you know, for the end of the main event as well. Was really clever booking that it's not only about this match and the titles changing hands, but they're already setting something up for you to want to come back and see some more.
Yeah, no, that was it. As we talked about last week, the storylines coming into this show weren't the strongest, and so they had to rely upon what they could do in the ring. But certainly coming out of the show with the title changes, it certainly gave something to talk about. And again, my memory's going, so I can't recall exactly what we predicted for the tag team championship about. But I think we might have even speculated that there could be a title change just to freshen things up for the division.
Credit where it's due, Mort. I think I wasn't sure that the titles would change hands, but I think you actually thought that they would.
Yeah, and I think it was probably because I thought if they were to retain the titles, it wouldn't really... It would just add to a bit of stagnation, the feeling of stagnation to the division. But having that title change certainly freshens things up and gives the Authors of Pain a credible pairing to compete against for the next several months. And I suspect that they'll probably have a rematch at the TakeOver event in November.
Yeah, and we also got Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly turning up there and getting involved at the end of that. So, again... obviously, the crowd were well aware of them, but also that, like you're saying, this kind of adds something else to it, doesn't it? It moves all these storylines along a little bit.
Mm. Oh, it does, yeah. Introducing that third team into the mix is certainly good. Fish and O'Reilly, who have been known as Red Dragon on the independents and in Japan, exceptional tag team. Perhaps slightly lacking on the charisma front, but... again, another pair of very, very fine workers in the ring. So certainly add to the tag team mix and help to play their part in bringing the tag team division back to what it was perhaps a year or two back. But then obviously we had the main event. Bobby Roode dropped the title. Drew McIntyre won it. I wasn't blown away by the match. I thought it was a reasonable match. Possibly even the weakest match of the night, or just slightly ahead of Aleister Black against Hideo Itami. But, McIntyre came across like a star and got the victory. And certainly the match in the last couple of minutes was certainly finishing on a high note. And then obviously at the end, we had the debut of Adam Cole, baby. So that was fantastic. And what was also fantastic was just how much of that crowd knew who he was. That was quite pleasing. Again, a star from Ring of Honor joining with his pals, Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly, who also were veterans of Ring of Honor. And that reaction to them was superb and sets things up nicely for Drew with Adam Cole. Though the size difference is quite stark. I mean, Drew's every bit of 6'5", 6'6", and Adam Cole is about 5'7", 5'8", and about 180, 190 pounds. So,
he looked like a star, though, didn't he? It had that feel that he was a star. This was important. And it was, it stood out to me at that moment. It confirmed to us on Tuesday night on SmackDown, but that for me was just... You could see that's it. That's, Rude's, not only has Rude dropped the title, but also to immediately set up a new storyline with Drew McIntyre after the bell's rung. That was, that was the signal, wasn't it, that things are moving on?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's right. It was an indication there that Bobby Rude would be moving on, and so it transpired. As we'll come on to. Overall, very pleasing show. Didn't look like a fantastic show on paper. Looked a decent show, but it delivered beyond expectations. So can't ask for much more. So very pleasing way to kick off the first of four nights.
Absolutely. Just a brief note as well on Aleister Black and Hideo Itami. I was looking forward to that, and that was I enjoyed that as a contest. I thought it was every bit hard hitting that we hoped it would be, and I think the success of that match was that Aleister Black came out of it looking that bit more of a star, and he just looks he comes across as being bigger and taller than he actually is. He just, there's just something about him, and you feel that they're building him nicely for the future here. I thought that was very, very smart, that the way they handled that.
Yeah, no, that's right. It was good with the live band playing him into his entrance, and the thing with him is he comes across as authentic, because the whole gimmick is very much based on the real life individual, and that's why he delivers it in a very realistic, believable way, and it stands him out. And you know, he's also a very, very good worker in the ring as well, which always helps.
Yeah.
So I think he's one of these individuals from NXT that when he does eventually move up to the master, will be over, because he's unique. You know, he's not one of these cookie cutter type characters, you know, that you can assemble on WWE 2K17 or whatever.
Don't speak too soon, Mo.
But no, he's certainly got something about him. He's got that star presence. I thought the match was had a bit of an anticlimactic ending. Certainly had its moments, very hard hitting. Aleister Black was busted open, I believe. And, you know, it was a good Japanese style match. If that's the worst match of the night, then, you know, you can't be disappointed, because it was a pretty good match in itself. So,
let's see how he does on the pre-show in front of 44 people.
Oh dear. Yeah. Well, that's nicely into SummerSlam.
Well, there's a segue for you. Yeah. Now this, I've got to say, Mo, this was probably the most distant thing of the weekend for me. And I thought what was really disappointing about it was just not very smart at all. You know, they've got a 2-hour pre-show there. They must realize that there's nobody in the crowd. You know, you've got all of these, you've got the panels, and you've got all these video packages lined up. And if you're going to do the, you know, three matches that which total, what, about 40 minutes between them, why do that first match so early in the first hour of the pre-show? Because that looked awful, and you've got to say, you really felt for the performers, and you could tell by the faces on some of them, they were not too chuffed either, were they? I mean, it was embarrassing, quite frankly, you know, for them, the Miz and Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel coming out there against the Hardys of all people, you know, the guys who've got this huge pop, to come out there in front of a few dozen people, it was embarrassing.
Well, it was, yeah. I mean, I bet when the Hardys left TNA, they didn't think that they'd be working empty arena matches again. But so it proved.
There was more people in the Hardy compound than was at the pre-show.
That's right. Absolutely. No, I think what perhaps had happened was that there was an issue with getting people into the building. Maybe they were carrying out additional security checks and things like that. So I think when they planned the show, the 2-hour pre-show, if things had gone to plan, it would have been full, certainly not, but there would almost certainly have been more people in the building than actually the
surely
case.
But surely you call an audible there and say, look, let's just keep going with some of the packages, and we'll delay the match for another 20 minutes. There's so much time there to play with. Surely you can call an audible on that and get a few more people in that audience to at least make it look like something.
Yeah, that's right. But I think what might have happened is the guys in the SmackDown tag team bout, which was also part of the pre-show, laid out a very long match, and they probably didn't want to cut it down by even a matter of 5 minutes. So that's part of the problem with some of these people, that you know, even if it makes sense to cut a match down because of that type of issue, people, as we call it in the wrestling business, still want to get their shit in. So
I can understand that, but for me, they don't even change their, you know, the length of time they're going to have in the match. It's just reorganizing all these endless packages the video packages that we're going to see that we're also then going to get repeated throughout the event itself anyway. I mean, surely there's a way of, you know, instead of a match coming out after one video package, you know, put the match back after the third video package. You know, there's so much video stuff material throughout that two-hour pre-show. Surely you can hold that match back till, like, I don't know, say 40 minutes into the first hour, and then leave the other two matches for the second hour. You know what I mean? At least let a few more hundred people get in the audience at the very least.
Yeah. Oh yeah, totally. I mean, by the time the match started, there was probably no more than 200 or 300 people in.
It was very early.
I mean 15,000 plus, I think, when it's full. That was just very embarrassing, and clearly the guys involved, or a number of them, weren't that impressed. But you're right. I mean, if they pushed it back to the start of the second hour, which was around the time that Neville and Tozawa had their match, there was at least a half decent number of fans within the building by then. And the fact is, it was a throwaway six-man match as well. And if they cut it down to 5 or 6 minutes, nobody really would have batted an eyelid.
Exactly.
I mean, it was an okay match, as was Neville against Tozawa. In fact, that was more than okay. That was actually a pretty good match by the Cruiserweight division standards. Obviously, we had the title switch, so Neville won his belt back.
Yeah, which we expected.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, that's right. So that went,
as you called it, a bit of a flip flop there.
Yeah. I mean, in retrospect, a bit of an odd one, but there you go. I suppose they wanted to create a bit of interest in the division, and thought maybe a title change might help. But the highlight of the pre-show by a long way, light and day, was the SmackDown Tag Team Championship bout between the Usos and the New Day. Whereby the Usos regained the championships, beating New Day in an absolutely fantastic match, even better than the one they had at Battleground, I think it was.
Yeah, they've got some good chemistry, haven't they, together?
Oh, they have, yes, absolutely. I mean, the Usos are, you know, a really good team, but the New Day are also very, very good. And you know, they laid out a really smart match with a bunch of very believable and well-executed near falls, which just added to the drama and excitement. And you know, by the end of it, the fans were on their feet. And when you get that kind of reaction, then you know you've done a really good job. So you know, great match. And you know, two title changes in the first three matches on the pre-show before the main show had even kicked off.
Yeah, bit of a theme for the night, as we'll get to. I mean, to see John Cena open an event is a rare thing, it's got to be said nowadays. That his match with Baron Corbin, bit of a throwaway. Do you get the impression that they're pretty much done with Baron Corbin here?
Possibly. I mean, the word is that Corbin losing his Money in the Bank title shot in the way he did on SmackDown last week was because he has heat backstage, and one of the people that apparently he has heat with is John Cena. And again, we talked about this match last week on a preview, and 2 weeks ago, and speculated that Cena might just win this, and it's possible that Corbin might have to continue the feud before getting a win over Cena. Well, it looks like that's not going to happen, given Cena turned up on Raw the next night. But no, it was a fairly straightforward win for Cena. Wasn't a particularly notable match, really. Wasn't a match that you'll go back and want to watch several times over.
But,
it was just you know, just an average match. And
be honest, pretty name me a Baron Corbin match that you want to go back and watch.
Yeah, I think they'll be struggling to come up with the material for a Best of Baron Corbin compilation DVD. But
yeah,
It seemed very much like you're getting ideas above your station, son. So we're going to put you back in your place, and
we're going to smack you down. There we go. So what about Natalya beating Naomi for the women's championship? I think they kind of telegraphed beforehand. Now, I certainly speculated a couple of weeks ago that we could see a cash in, perhaps from I can't remember her name now. Carmella, sorry.
Carmella. Yeah.
I speculate there's the possibility there of a cash in from Carmella. On the face of it, yeah, it makes more sense for Carmella to keep going because this is working well. Her character's really evolved with the briefcase in her possession. But I think, you know, showing her hanging around backstage beforehand kind of telegraphed that we weren't going to see her cash in because they like to do it as a surprise, don't they? But were you surprised by Natalya coming out of this with a clean win? It's it just seems a little bit from nowhere. Natalya's not really done much for so long.
Yeah, I think I predicted her to win the title because when she won the Eliminator to earn the title shot, from that, it felt to me like they wanted to give her a match at SummerSlam to almost be a reward for good service. She's been in the WWE for a good, 8-9 years now. So by the female division standards, that's an eternity. So she's really put in her service there, and I think that was pretty much the only reason why they put the belt on her. Not because she's particularly over, because she isn't, but she's just seen as a really good professional, a solid hand, and they thought, right, let's give her a title win on one of our big shows, and that's the only reason I think they went with that. Clearly Charlotte would have been the better individual to face Naomi for the belt, but as it then transpired, it was perhaps for the best that she wasn't booked in this match, because there's a decent chance she would have missed it anyway, given health issues with her father. I thought a pretty good match. Certainly picked up towards the end, and sharpshooter finish. So a good kind of throwback to her uncle there. And, we have a new champion.
Yeah, big cast, big show. I guess what we expected, really. Not one for your back catalogue to go and look over again. Pretty nondescript, and we expected big cast winning that one. But more newsworthy than anything from this match was him tearing his ACL the following night on Raw, and the news that he's going to be out of action for around about 9 months.
Yeah, that's right. Terrible shame for Cass. Now, since he split from Enzo, they've certainly been putting Cass over very strongly, and it felt to me like they had some decent plans to do something with Cass, possibly involving the title. The WWE Universal Championship. Clearly, that's almost become like a super heavyweight championship in recent times. So it could well have been that they were planning to, if not do something with him immediately for the title, then certainly feud with somebody like a Roman Reigns, perhaps. And then if he was to emerge victorious from that, then earning a title shot down the line. But it was 10.5 minutes. As a match, which was probably about 10 minutes too long. It wasn't one of the better matches you'll see, but it was a predictable finish in the end with Cash winning. Enzo managed to come out of the cage with the help of lubricant or oil or something, and that really wasn't
the less said about that, the better.
This show.
Yeah. The less said about that, the better.
Very predictable finish. Cass won. But big shame for him that he's now sidelined for possibly until after WrestleMania. So a terrible blow for him.
Yeah. And we had 4 minutes of video packages before we had 10 seconds of Randy Orton defeating Rusev.
Yeah, complete waste of time. Orton's just a nonentity as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, sure, he's a good worker, but he just, I couldn't be any more indifferent towards anyone on the WWE roster than I am towards Randy Orton.
Yeah.
And it was a waste of Rusev again. Talented worker, has a lot of potential, but just, again, misused. It didn't serve any purpose, really, other than to have Orton go out there and hit an RKO. So well done. Yeah, short-sighted in my view.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. A waste of Rusev, absolutely. Sasha Banks beating Alexa Bliss. Crowd are really good for Sasha here. I've got to say, they weren't quite as into Alexa Bliss as I expected, because she's been getting over really well lately as a champion. I think she's done such a good job, but they felt a little bit flat for her. But overall, you know, Sasha's a champion. I wonder, is this the beginnings of a changing character for her, though? You know, I wonder if this is the plan, you know, with Bayley to return, and perhaps we're going to see a change for Sasha to go heel on Bayley.
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, it's something that they've been very subtly teasing, if subtly is a word, since before WrestleMania, with Sasha acting very pleased for a friend that she was going to get title shot and all that kind of stuff, and obviously winning the belt as well. I actually thought that the reaction was 50-50. I thought there was a sizable element in the crowd, mostly the male audience, that were pro-Alexa, just because, as you could tell from reaction to Bayley when she put in a bit of a cameo, she was roundly booed.
Very interesting, isn't it, how the crowd have kind of distanced themselves away from her. But I think it's, yeah. See, I don't think it's Bayley's fault. I think the way that she's been booked over the last probably 6 months has been really just awful. And especially for, you know, such a pure baby face in her, you know, to accept being handed, you know, accept being handed a title almost, you know, and to that chance to pick up a kendo stick and beat someone after being told she's too weak to do it, and actually follow through what the heel said, that she is too weak and she wouldn't do it. You know, for me, the way that she's been booked is just, you know, baying for the crowd to turn on her. It's an odd one.
Yeah, no, that's right. No, I thought Alexa didn't do a very good job at this right before the match even started. The facial expression just gave away. It was what we call a "I'm doing the job" face. Clearly looked quite unhappy, and you know, gave away the result. And you know, sure enough, Sasha won the title again. And I thought the match itself was pretty decent match. Not right at the top levels of some of the best matches we've seen from Charlotte in the last 18 months, but still pretty decent. Alexa's come along, you know, quite admirably in the last 12 months on NXT and on the main roster. But no, not quite at those levels, but still pretty decent in its own right.
Yeah. Good to see Finn Balor, you know, finally make his demon entrance. This match with Bray Wyatt, it was as well as could be expected, because I'm, as you feel towards Randy Orton, I now feel that way towards Bray Wyatt. And this is a character I used to enjoy, but I do feel completely ambivalent towards him. I think I just feel like, you know, people stopped caring about 2 years ago, and rather than change it and shake it up, they just keep offering the same thing over and over and over again. So I really do hope that this is the end of this particular feud.
Yes, and certainly there wasn't any real follow-up to it the next night on Raw. Balor got the win here, as he should have. It wasn't a great match. It was passable, but you couldn't expect much more, given it was Bray that was involved. He just doesn't impress me much. In fact, the only thing that they can do to really make his character interesting is if they played off of his real life affair with the ring announcer JoJo, I think her name is. If they kind of work some kind of storyline around that, maybe people actually care about Bray Wyatt, but all they really care about is his ring entrance. So they put their lights on their phones, and it creates a great visual. As soon as that's over, there's nothing of interest there. And until they change that gimmick or do something with him that gets people's attention, he'll continue to be received very poorly.
Yeah, I think Bray Wyatt needs to go and have a discussion with The Undertaker, Mark Calloway, as to how you continually reinvent yourself with a character that, a gimmick that looks perhaps one-dimensional, and how you can reinvent yourself and rediscover your gimmick over and over and keep it fresh and keep the crowd interested in it. But that's a discussion for another day. The Raw Tag Team titles, two-thirds of the former Shield, Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins, as we expected, winning the titles from Cesaro and Sheamus. I really enjoyed this match, and I've got to say, Mo, this match contained my favourite moment of the night. A beach ball bouncing around in the crowd. Cesaro suddenly springs off the apron, charges across, and the camera just kind of catches him just as he's done it, and it catches the commentators out, and you could tell by the reaction that it is a genuine thing, off the cuff, into the crowd, grabs the beach ball, rips it apart quite impressively, and gets a huge cheer. I absolutely loved that moment, and I did enjoy this match as well.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good match. I think that was another one I did quite well for predictions. That was another one I got right. So I had a rare good night for calling the outcomes for a change. It was good to see that storyline continue between the pair. It's inevitable that there will be a split. One will turn on the other and turn heel. At this stage, not sure who. I think they'll be good for the tag team division. I think it will be good for them. The careers have certainly stagnated. Rollins especially over the last year or so. So having this slow burn, a feud that one turns on the other and they feud against each other, is probably just a thing to reignite one or possibly both of their careers. The match was good. But the beach ball, well, anytime I see one of those, I just have flashbacks to the Sunderland goal at Anfield back about 7 years ago or 8 years ago.
Us Liverpool fans are scarred by the sight of beach balls. So, yeah,
we are forever.
Cesaro, you are a hero.
Absolutely.
I've got to say as well, it's kind of indicative in this match as well, is just how good Cesaro and Sheamus are together, and how it kind of reminds me to throwing back into probably early 90s, back in WCW, when they weren't sure what to do with Steve Austin, so they stuck him and Brian Pillman together, and, you know, kind of a throwaway tag team. They got themselves the name, the Hollywood Blondes. They really put an effort, you know, they got together and put some effort into their gimmick and everything, and they started working it and started to get over really well, and it was really kicking off. And I kind of get that vibe with these two, that they've really tried to do something here to make this work. And I just think they've got a natural chemistry, because we know that outside of the ring, you know, that they are good friends, and it really comes through, you know, when they're performing. I think they've really come on so well together, and they look like just such a strong tag team.
Oh, they are, absolutely. It's a very good comparison with the Hollywood Blondes. These are guys that WWE creative really didn't know what to do with them, so they thought, okay, well, let's just throw them together because they're mates. But they've made it work. You know, they've worked on coming across as cohesive and as a team in the ring, but also in terms of how they present themselves and the entrance and some of these little things that they do, that all just, comes together and makes them come across like a bona fide tag team rather than two individuals that are just stuck together for an interim period. And I think because of the success of that, they'll probably stick around as a pairing longer, certainly, than Ambrose and Rollins will. So I'm sure that at the point at which Rollins and Ambrose have their inevitable split, wouldn't be surprised to see Sheamus and Cesaro opposite them in the ring, benefiting with the titles going back to them. And how really well that deserve that will be.
Yeah, I've got to agree, actually. I can see the same thing happening myself. US title, one of the few titles on the night that didn't change hands, AJ Styles retaining against Kevin Owens. Of course, the narrative for this match was building towards an eventual feud between Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon. Again, these two, I think their matches have got better and better recently. You know, we're quite disappointed with some of their matches going back a month or two ago, but these seem to have got going, found their groove together.
I thought that this was a pretty good match, but again, given it's two of the best workers in the WWE, two of the best workers in the entire business, for a 17-minute match, it was still comfortably short of what these guys are capable of. So yet again, I was left disappointed with AJ Styles and Kevin Owens match. Now I think back to when Kevin Owens had made his debut on the WWE main roster a couple of years back, and he was having those matches with John Cena, and each one was absolutely superb. And you know, AJ Styles is a better worker than John Cena. So, I just don't understand why these two haven't clicked in the way that Owens and Cena did. So it's a bit of a mystery to me.
I thought they had a really good match a few weeks ago. I think this match probably wasn't as good as it could have been, perhaps because of the Shane McMahon element in it. And obviously, you know, we had to keep getting smashed over the head with a hammer on that, you know, on that part of the storyline. You know, that really was the story that was to be told here, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. It certainly seemed to be a tease for a match between Owens and McMahon later on down the line, which was a distraction. But, I mean, we've had matches before with guest referees that have turned out to be exceptional. The most notable example, obviously, being Bret against Stone Cold at WrestleMania 13 with Ken Shamrock as the guest referee. You know, it's not that they can't convey some form of storyline involving a special guest ref whilst having a great match at the same time. And clearly this feud will continue. They continue to work with each other a couple of nights later in a match on SmackDown, which again, I thought was a pretty good match, but still not a fantastic match. These guys should be having match of the year contenders. That's how good they are. None of the matches that they've delivered thus far come anywhere close to that. So that's why I've been underwhelmed by these two and been surprisingly disappointed by them.
Yeah, I can fully understand that. I have to say one thing though. There was a great line. This is one of the many things that I love about Kevin Owens. Is he's so vocal as a heel in the ring, you know, shouting at the crowds, always making sure he can be heard, little things here and there. And there was a point where, you know, Shane McMahon had got caught with a boot and he couldn't come and make the count. And you've got Kevin Owens shouting at him, "Are you kidding me? You literally jump off buildings." I just thought that was just great. You know, some of these lines that he throws in that are just part of why I love Kevin Owens. Such a great all-round entertainer as well as wrestler. To go from talking about entertainment to something that was, I've got to say, less than entertaining. The WWE Championship, you know, this prestigious title with great lineage. Jinder Mahal successfully defending against Shinsuke Nakamura. Now, I know the way that they suddenly hit, I mean, it was kind of abrupt, but the way that they hit the finish was obviously there to design to protect Nakamura. But I don't know more. It was very, very disappointing. And it's just so evident how limited Mahal is in these matches with some of these great performers that we just don't get anything. And it just doesn't feel like a WWE title match somehow to me.
Well, no, it doesn't, because the champion is not somebody you should... Well, he isn't a world champion caliber talent. And you can be a world champion caliber individual in different ways. You don't have to be necessarily great in the ring. You can be somebody who has great charisma, great promo skills, lots of different things. Mahal has none of those. He's not a great promo, doesn't have great charisma, is certainly not a great worker, not particularly over. So there's no really redeeming factors that say or suggest that this guy should be a world champion. But yeah, it was, you know, a disappointing match, which I'm not surprised about. I still thought it would be half decent given Nakamura was involved, but the finish just left everyone deflated, because clearly a lot of the crowd, the vast majority, in fact, were hoping to see Nakamura lift that championship belt. And he's certainly an individual that does deserve it. He's got everything, perhaps with the obvious exception of promo skills. Though, that said, his promos in Japanese might be pretty decent, but they'll be lost on the vast majority of the audience. But yeah, it's one of these things that unfortunately we're going to have to suffer with for, well, perhaps a few more weeks yet. Is Mahal as champion. But the feud will continue. We saw that on SmackDown this past week. And we're hoping that when he gets his rematch, which seems like he will, that'll be the time when he relieves Mahal of the championship. But it wasn't to be at SummerSlam.
Yeah, I mean, we all know why they've done what they've done and put Mahal in that position. And like we said, it just felt it was too much of a hot shot and it was too obvious. They could do the same thing with him, but with the US title. I think it, and that in itself, you know, him carrying the US title, you know, and him then, you know, talking down to the audience, you know, to the US audience, it'd probably get him actually more heat holding that US belt whilst he's talking down to a US audience. But, well, you know what? Well, let's not get drawn into that. Right. We're going to save the best to last. Because I've got to say, Mo, I was always looking forward to, from the first moment that I kind of sniffed out the possibility that we could be looking at a four-way of Lesnar, Reigns, Joe, and Strowman. I was really looking forward to it. I thought it'd been built up really well, and the anticipation at least did not turn into an anticlimax, because this was great. You know, it might not be, you know, 101 wrestling classic great, but I just thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. And we even had another of the Braun Strowman throwing the office chair moment in this. It just started at 100 miles an hour. The crowd were mad into this. And it was, for me, it was a fantastic way to end the show.
Oh, it was, yeah. I mean, if you watched that main event and thought it was meh, boring, average, you really need to stop watching wrestling. Because, you know, this was just a fantastic match. And it was so cleverly booked. It was a fantastic way to get Strowman over, like, even more of a monster than he already is. And he just looked... Never mind a million bucks, but a billion bucks. Just destroying everyone and everything in sight, including all the announcers' tables. And that was just superb to see. And all credit to Brock, because Now, he's clearly somebody who doesn't show vulnerability to opponents easily. So he clearly chooses who to come across vulnerable to. He clearly sees something in Strowman and he's looking to put him over. But I think we again predicted last week that Brock Lesnar would win just because there was a lot of speculation that he'd lose the belt. And so it proved that, you know, he did indeed retain the title. But along the way, it was heavy metal wrestling, wasn't it? You know, very, very intense, all action, no real lull periods. It was almost the anti-Randy Orton match, just 100 miles an hour. All credit to the guys. You know, they really put a shift in. And
With four super heavyweights in there, the crowd reacting like that, you know, the pace of the action, so many talking points, so many high spots. You know, Vince McMahon has got to be, you know, you've seen that gif of him where he looks like he's losing his mind and falls off his chair. I guess that was him backstage.
Yeah, that's right, absolutely. you know, that's just kind of shows the kind of power of the match and just how smart the whole thing was presented. And that's why I thought it was a really fitting finale and what really made the show so special. When you've got a show where not just necessarily this show, but just any show where the undercard is up and down, and you know, you've got a mixture of good and bad matches. If you've got a really strong main event, that in itself can turn it into a really, you know, pleasing show. But the fact that we had a number of, you know, good or very good matches on the undercard, topped off by the best match of the night in the main event, for me made it a very easy thumbs up show. And so that's why those fans that thought it wasn't a good show leave me confused, because I don't really know what exactly they were expecting from a 30 match card. You know, you can't expect every single match to be great, because I don't think any show in the history of wrestling business has delivered 30 matches, all of which would be great. So, you know, if that was your expectation, then, you know, perhaps you need to find something else to watch.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's just so much content. There's so much on there that it's going to be difficult to get, like you mentioned, you know, to get everyone out there long enough to put something meaningful together. And that's maybe where in future perhaps they're going to have to trim this down a touch, you know, just to, you know, two or three less matches and just make it quality, you know, and make it a bit more all round solid. Yeah, there was some lows in there. There was some disappointing moments. There was a few poor matches, but like you said, you know, a great main event, two excellent tag team title matches, you know, and some other moments dotted in there as well. Overall, I quite enjoyed it. It wasn't great. It wasn't the best, one of the best SummerSlams ever, but it was one of the best SummerSlam main events I've seen. It was even one of the most enjoyable, you know, viewing experiences, that main event. So, yeah, on the whole, I quite enjoyed the show. I certainly enjoyed the NXT TakeOver. For me, it was a positive weekend. I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, oh, totally. Excellent NXT show. Very, very, very good SummerSlam. And TV was very eventful as well. Again, with some good crowd reactions, some good matches too. Good storyline developments, and so it made for, you know, four nights of very good wrestling from the WWE, good TV. Yeah. So all things considered, you know, very enjoyable, and certainly worthwhile. What ended up being 14 hours of programming.
it's a lot to get through. It really is. So what about then Raw and SmackDown? I mean, we've seen Monday that, you know, they actually confirmed, didn't they? So we're going to get Lesnar and Strowman in a one-on-one match, which I will be looking forward to watching. We've had John Cena debut, re-debut on Raw. They certainly teased and were looking towards Cena versus Reigns. I mean, the crowds, the way that they played the crowd was great. You know, again, the crowd reaction, Cena getting mostly positive reactions these days, it's got to be said. Reigns getting the biggest boos of the night, and then that just kind of amplified the crowd going even more for Cena. And then we get some more jaw thrown into the mix. I like the way things have kind of been moved along slightly, but not necessarily, throwing a baby out of the bathwater and completely changing it. It feels like the card's kind of getting evolved just a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. No, it's, overall a pretty strong Raw, in fact. They kind of tie things up nicely coming out of SummerSlam, but then set things up very nicely for the, not only the weeks, but the months ahead as well. Reigns and Cena is a mega match, but certainly the seeds were planted for that to happen. Even if it's not at the next Raw exclusive pay-per-view, then certainly Survivor Series would be a good candidate to host that match. And obviously we've got the next Raw pay-per-view to feature Strowman against Lesnar. A very hot angle to open Raw between the two. Again, Strowman was put over like a megastar. So that was really, really smart, very good. And, we had some good stuff, throughout the rest of the show as well. So pleasing overall, by Raw standards, the 3 hours went by reasonably well, flowed quite well. And it was not too dissimilar for SmackDown, whereby, as you mentioned earlier, Bobby Roode debuted as a face, faced, it was Aiden English.
I said pre-pod, I did say I know Bobby Roode debuting as a face, as he's been, established as a heel. It comes across as strange to people, but I said, I think in a way they're being smart. They know it's a hardcore audience. They know they're going to pop for him and for that music coming out. It almost makes sense. Let him debut as a face. He can even, I thought he gave a hint, a few little very, very subtle hints towards heel in his interview after the match. I think that's what they'll do over the coming few weeks with his promo skills, with his interviews. He'll just naturally transition back into being a heel again, and he'll do it in a way that the crowd will actually boo him rather than just turning up, and the crowd, instead of the crowd booing as they want to, they're actually cheering him because they're happy to see him.
Yeah, no, it's a good way to bring him in. He's somebody who's naturally a very good heel, but he has been getting good babyface type reactions on NXT. Pretty much since he debuted, in fact. So I think they just want to test the waters in terms of how well he works as a face. As we've seen with popular heels, though, that's not always the smartest thing, as we've seen with Charlotte. Since they turned her face, that's been an absolute disaster. So it could be that the same thing happens for Roode. Or it might be that, unlike Charlotte, he makes it work. And if it doesn't, it's very easy for them to turn him, and it'll only require very minor tweaks to the way he presents himself or works his matches, cuts his promos to transition over to a heel. It's a well-deserved call-up, and I'm sure he'll add certainly value to the SmackDown brand.
Absolutely. We're just about out of time here. One last thing before we do go, though, Mo. The Mae Young Classics are actually starting up on the WWE Network. I know you spoke more about them quite a few weeks ago when they were originally doing some of the tapings. Is there plenty there to look forward to for fans?
Oh, there is, yeah. No, it's going to be a really intriguing set of shows to watch. So the initial shows are being released as a set of four on the WWE Network, and I believe that those are going to hit the WWE Network this weekend. And then it'll be the bank holiday Monday, in fact. So on the 28th, they'll be released for viewing, and there'll be 4 shows in total. 32 women from around the world. I mentioned some of the names last time, such as Jazzy Gobert, who has fought as the alpha female, who also competes sometimes as an MMA fighter. Got a very, very unique look about her. Not somebody you'd want to mess with, trust me. I've sat behind her at a show, and she's certainly got star presence. One of the people I actually mentioned last time was Nixon Newell, who was one of my favourites to win the whole tournament. But unfortunately, she suffered an injury which ruled her out of the tournament, which was a crying shame. One of the other individuals to really keep an eye on is Kairi Sane, the former Kairi Hojo, who's exceptional, arguably the best female talent in the entire business, who's worked in the Stardom promotion in Japan. And, expect her to go very far in this tournament. Bank Holiday Monday is when the first set of shows featuring the first round matches from the round of 32 will air. And that will culminate with a live finale on the 12th of September. So it's only about 2 weeks between the start of release of the initial shows and the live finale. So plenty of good stuff to catch in the meantime. And the reports are that some of the matches, a lot of the matches were pre-taped, obviously, except for the live finale that's set for the 12th. But a lot of good stuff apparently took place. So if you are keen to check out something that's not too dissimilar to the Cruiserweight Classic from last year, strongly urge you to try and watch at least a bit of the Mae Young Classic.
Yeah, it certainly sounds promising, and I'm sure we'll have a bit of a discussion about that probably in the lead up to that that finale. But that just about wraps things up for us this week. Hope you've enjoyed the show. My thanks, as always, to Mo Chatra, my on-air tag team partner, for analysing the situation and helping me through somewhere like 14 hours of programming in 4 days. So, yeah, and our thanks to you, as always, the listener, for hitting that download button and listening to us here on the PW Index, on the Anfield Index podcast channel. As always, if you do want to keep in touch with us here at PW_index, I can't even say it, is our Twitter handle. So do hit us up there. Anything you want to suggest, questions you want to ask, or you just want to get involved in any way, your thoughts, opinions, whatever the case may be, that's how you can contact us. But until next week, from myself, Andy Wales, it's bye-bye now.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.